Good morning. Today is Thursday, November the 11th. Happy Veterans Day, everybody. Joining us this morning, even on a day off, Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian, and happy Veterans Day to you.
Yeah. Do you have any vets in your family?
Not alive anymore, but yes.
Well, okay, yeah. The living was the reference, I suppose. I should have been more clear.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, this is one of those days that was always so special. You know, I know all the communities would have really special events for the veterans. And it's one thing I really miss with COVID. I loved going over to the Adorney, and it was just such a wonderful celebration.
Yeah, part of kind of like the pre-holiday event, the kickoff,
right,
so to speak, also,
right,
as well as the recognition for vets. So,
yeah.
Yes.
Seeing all of them there, and, you know, some of them, I always remember they, you know, announced the different generations, the different wars, and people would be there. It was just really, really exceptional. I really appreciated the way it was organized.
You ready for your question?
I have one for you. I thought I'd find one that would be appropriate for Veterans Day.
All right. All right.
You ready?
Absolutely.
Why do we say caught a lot of flack?
Caught a lot of flack. Okay. Caught flack, 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 flack. I would imagine flack would be a negative comment or instructions.
Right.
So let's say somebody who didn't follow orders that closely.
So flack is actually an acronym for German air defense cannons. The Germans called the guns Fliegerabwehrkanonen. And Flieger means flyer, Abwehr means defense, and Kanonen means cannon. So airmen in World War II had to fly through dangerous clouds of shrapnel created by flak. The phrase progressed in meaning until it became equated with abusive criticism.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
I know. I was a little worried about the 17-syllable German word.
You worked your way through that one. I suppose that's in Brokaw's book. I've refused to read that one until 2025. I don't know why. It just was something with the time reference. You know, 80 years after, then I'll read about the Greatest Generation. And until
right.
then,
right?
Yeah, I'll just kind of have to wing it on my own, so to speak.
Hopefully not through flak.
No, no, no. If there's cannon fire in Humboldt County, I'm not going to be the only one having to deal with it, I would like to think. Oh,
right, that's right.
Gee. Before the show, we were just kind of doing the little kibitzing, and you said that a lot of the new laws and I guess, philosophies and new protocols, instead of having a lead-in time to be able to assimilate them into the system and do it smoothly, now a lot of these are almost like just in time or start tomorrow or start at the end of the month.
That's right.
How
that's
prevalent right. is that?
Well, you know, it was interesting because we've had some ballot measures that, you know, literally said to take effect, you know, really quickly. And it really sort of throws you because, you know, we try to track the various bills going through the legislators, but sometimes you don't realize how quickly something's taking effect. So, for example, now we have misdemeanor diversion, 1001.95, and it was effective, I think it was September 30th, you know, so the next week in October, we're already seeing those. And it's just, it's pretty quick happening, and you really have to work double time to try to keep track of these, you know.
It kind of sounds, just with the title of that, the misdemeanor diversion, that it's not insignificant things either. You know, that you can't buy, you know, you have to have left-handed paper rather than right-handed paper or something really innocuous and small. I mean, misdemeanor diversion sounds like it's a significant thing to the system.
Well, it is, and historically, diversion was tied to a person's record. So, for example, we've always had drug diversion. So for the first-time offender, they were automatically eligible for diversion. This new diversion the legislators just passed doesn't have any of those requirements in it. So, you know, you're looking at people who maybe have a pretty significant record, but that are technically under the law still eligible. And where the fast pace kind of affects us is I do trial assignment every week, and I'm seeing these pop up. So we'll have cases that are a year or two old, but now because the law has changed, these people are saying, well, they're eligible for diversion. And then we're trying to get a hold of victims really quickly to say, just so you know, this is being considered. You know, and we've had some people who have said, I'm not in agreement with that. I want them to have a consequence. I want, you know, something to happen. And it's, you know, and so then we repeat that to the judges, but obviously nobody really considered that when they decided to just throw a switch and pass a new law.
Well, that brings up an interesting aspect of it. The event happens, let's say, today. The charge happens tomorrow. Court date is, let's say, in a week, but somewhere in between, the law changes. It's retroactive, so that, you know, if you get arrested for something today, if that law changes, it's when it goes to court, it's not what was in effect at the time of the event. It's what's
right.
Current time.
And the amazing part is how much time we spend going back and undoing what we've already done. So, you know, we're constantly, when these changes occur, we'll have a couple of months of just being swamped with going through old cases and making changes. So, for example, it's been now about a year, they changed the terms of probation. That is the length that someone can be on. We had to go back and pool all the misdemeanors and felony cases where people were on probation and terminate probation because they'd already gone beyond the term that the legislators decided should be the new term. So,
what if it goes the other way and becomes more strident or more strict or more punishable, I guess? I know that doesn't happen often.
It's effective in the future because you can't.
Okay. The door does swing one way. Okay.
One way. So it's a constant, it's so fascinating because right now there's a couple boxes outside of one of the legal secretary's area. I'm supposed to be going through those. And I said, now what are these? You know, and again, it's, oh, here's another change we have to go through and
holy cow.
Address. So it just feels like we spent a lot of time undoing what we've already done.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Join Warren Eckstein on KINS in the 6 o'clock hour as he explains pet behaviors, different fun facts, tips, and all sorts of info about your animals and the way they think and act.
Here are just some of the things that kids learn when they have pets in their life.
If you're an animal lover, this is absolutely the program you need to hear.
You know, vocalizations are a very important part of animal communication and their language. Hi, this is Warren Eckstein. Hear my daily pet tip weekdays on KINS FM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, the entire concept of this changing landscape, I mean, you guys have, and gals have got enough challenges, you know, with what the judicial system is doing, what the case law is doing, what the local community is wanting to have done, what law enforcement is doing also. How do you manage going through this sort of thing without either jumping out of the first floor window and running or just feeling like, you know, it's not as much fun as it used to be?
So I think what, you know, we are always trying to do is, you know, number one, to predict what could be happening so that we're, you know, preparing for it and also not wasting our time. You know, that's the other thing to consider as we know in January, we're going to have a lot more options for judges as far as enhancements. So we're sort of looking at those already because what we don't want to do is say, let's try a case tomorrow, you know, specifically because of these enhancements, when the reality is by the time that person gets sentenced, those may no longer be available. So we're doing that a lot. And then just trying to be really, guess judicious is the best way to say it, with what we are doing. Because it's recognizing, and I guess this is sort of the key part. We have tremendous discretion, and in part it's because you really do want to tailor consequences and outcomes to the individual. You know, you're always thinking in terms of this result should match what this person needs. Why is this person in the system? Let's address that. But at the same time, being aware of what the limitations are. So, for example, you know, everybody knows in our community, we're really hard hit. We don't have as many mental health services as we should. So it's difficult when we have sort of the chronic offender who has mental health issues because there's not a lot of services locally to help them adjust. So always trying to balance what can we do, you know, how can we try to alter this behavior, and also recognizing the limitations that, you know, we have here in Humboldt County. One area, Brian, that I know is a big concern in Eureka, and I know EPD is really struggling to deal with it, is we've had sort of chronic vandalism.
Yeah.
And it's really, that's the crime that I think really is offensive to so many individuals because there is no value to it. You know, people can go, oh, someone came in and, you know, stole some food. And everybody goes, oh, okay, you know, you can understand that on some level. But to just break windows, you know, to go through and just break all those windows is just, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah, some of the unpredictables. And I think, boy, I don't remember if it was that book that I bought and then gave it to you after I read it that was so unsettling.
Oh,
but,
right.
But
right.
The lack of predictability.
Yeah.
You know, that there's no connection between the dots. It's just impulse-driven 100%, and that's it. And you can't really anticipate what somebody's impulses necessarily are going to be.
Right. And that's the classic individual that's hard to address in our criminal court system, right? Because, you know, if they get caught, and, you know, that's other part of the other problem, either, you know, they've got substance abuse issues, okay, so we can say you should go do a drug treatment program. But for the mental health folks who are behaving this way, what do we do for them? You know, we don't have a lot of services. And obviously, if it's, you know, something where they're going to be hospitalized, that's a different story. But trying to find a solution to cope with that type of problem is very, very difficult for our system.
Well, is it a fool's errand?
Well, not for everybody. And, you know, and again, that's the hard part. There are those where you really can, you know, find programs that work for them or help them in some way. But it's interesting. I think I mentioned before, we've spent a couple of years now working with the various tribal judges and tribal courts. They want to set up programs for tribal members. And so we are, you know, if someone's committing a crime, but they're a tribal member, they can be referred to tribal court, and they have, you know, sort of the more restorative justice. But part of what they're able to do and they're, you know, doing for their tribal members is, you know, housing programs. So it's much more intense, and they have those services, you know, unlike Eureka. You know, it's a much bigger problem for a large large urban area to try to deal with one-on-one problem people like that, but that is our goal, obviously.
So it's more of a scale issue for
right.
That the tribes are able to address because they're dealing with single digits instead of multiple dozens like the non-tribal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Are there lessons that can be taken out of that though once it's up and running, or because it's on tribal lands that flexibility is really not transferable?
And that's, I think, the issue we have to sort of look at, because I will say one piece of that is when you have the strength of that community, there's more pressure on the person to comply. You know, so if someone says, here's what we're expecting of you, and there's the support and there's sort of, you know, that community connection, it's much more effective. With us, you know, we say to someone, oh, we're requiring that you go, you know, see this, you know, substance abuse count were required. A lot of people aren't going to do it, and there's really
no peer pressure.
You know, right. And so that's one thing that I really, really appreciate about sort of the tribal ability of restorative justice, is because there are those connections that then, you know, I mean, it's sort of more like a family, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Maggie, with some of these new laws that are in place, we still have got the old crimes. You know, whether it's what you were talking about before, the randomness of somebody who just likes to, you know, break windows, start fires, you know, that kind of behavior, or some of the more traditional ones. You know, this time of the year, typically there were pot farm busts and people would be brought in and have to deal with the consequences of that, or whatever other seasonal fluctuations that might occur as we start rolling into the wintertime. Has that abated at all? Or is that just kind of on top of having to go back and do some of the research that you were referencing earlier, and some of the mental health related issues, and?
So we still have, you know, for lack of a better term, seasonal crimes. Not so much the cannabis, because that's really dropped down in our community. The changes in the law have affected that. Sadly, we still see far too many, you know, robberies associated with it, because we're still dealing with the cash in that business. But what we see a lot more at this time of year are more of the thefts related to the holidays. You know, obviously people have to worry more about packages being delivered to their porches. But then we see a lot of thefts occurring in stores associated with, you know, there's just more crowds. It becomes a problem. But otherwise, it's pretty consistent, you know, other than sort of that little uptick from time to time, it's pretty consistent year-round what we see.
One of the things that has been, I don't know, either mildly amusing or very disturbing, depending on who you talk to, is what's going on in San Francisco with the closure of the CVS stores, the In-N-Out Burger, reduced hours, these things, because, you know, these folks are walking in, they're loading up their carts, they're pushing it out, and there's no prosecution, and it just, you know, became untenable. Do you have any insight on what that is all about and how it got to that point?
So San Francisco is not unique, sadly. And a big part of this was, as we all remember, Prop 47, the one that was so greatly misnamed, you know, Safe Neighborhoods, Safe Schools. That was the one that eliminated the ability, when you had a chronic petty thief, after a couple of those, to make that person a felon. And the idea was really curbing their behavior by treating them with much more significant consequences. So right now in our community, as throughout all of California, you can have someone who literally is committing their 9th, their 10th, their 11th petty theft, and it's still a misdemeanor. And with misdemeanors, you know, in part due to COVID, there is no jail time. There is no real consequence for that behavior. So a person is put on probation and told to obey all laws. And that, of course, doesn't curb people's actions at all. So I was recently at our statewide conference, and we have a legislative summit where we sit and discuss what can we do. And I, of course, suggested that we try to get back the old petty with a prior becomes a felony, and the room let me know that that was virtually impossible, which I understand. But, you know, you got to dream big. Like I said, you know, I'm asking for a pony for Christmas.
Right,
don't
right.
Don't laugh at me. You know? Yeah. But that's the big issue. So if we get to $950, and that was the other thing, it used to be $400. It's now $950, then it becomes grand theft, then it's a felony. Up until that, it stays a misdemeanor. And sadly, what's happening is stores are just saying, why even bother calling the police? And we're losing that. What I saw, Brian, was I went through, you know, looked at the end of the year stats, and with 2020, you know, and COVID, our numbers were way down. Sadly, DUI, driving under the influence, was pretty consistent. And then petty theft and those types of burglaries remained very high. So we average around 1,300 of those a year in our community, which is shocking. What's also sort of telling, it's when we went through and looked at the name of the individuals, there was only about 900, which means, you know, obviously a certain percentage of them are the repeat offenders. So what we need to do is to come up with other solutions. And Chief Day of Fortuna came up with something that they were doing over in Shasta, and I've asked for a meeting with the judges to discuss doing this next. And it's sort of a chronic offender program where when we have those people who we just keep seeing over and over and over again, they really do have to be treated differently. And just what they did in Shasta was the sheriff committed a certain number of beds to those individuals. So the idea is, even though they didn't fit the matrix that the jail uses, you know, they weren't a felon, they weren't serious violent, they weren't any of those other categories, because of the fact that they were chronic, they were going to be housed. They weren't going to be released as normally that crime would have happened. So we're going to do it. I just hoping, you know, to get the judges to buy in on it, because otherwise they could ultimately say, release this individual. And we need to really adjust how we're treating these people, because it's crushing.
Are the judges immune to the what's going on the street? I would, you know, they're not business owners, so they don't see that. They may have buddies that are, but they don't, or maybe their spouse is doing something like that. But they don't see the day-to-day, you know, they park in the basement, and they go upstairs, and then they do their day, and then they go back down, and then they go along their way. They're not as subject to some of the stuff that we see, either as business owners or as members of the community. Are they sensitive to this, or do you think they really would turn somebody out and said, you know, he's not that bad, kick him out, even if there was space to put him in there? Because just the fatigue, I think, that everybody is feeling with these repeat right. offenders is just almost debilitating.
Well, I think what we have to focus on is highlighting the person's chronic record. So in other words, when you're at the jail, you know, working the jail, a law enforcement officer brings someone in and you go, oh, it's a petty theft, we're not holding those. But when the officer says, no, you know, this is the eighth time we've arrested this person in the last 3 months, then the jail goes, oh, okay. And that's what the judges need to hear. Don't look at this individual, oh, this guy stole, you know, $200 from Ace Hardware. Let's recognize how many cases he has.
Cumulative, so right now, both ways, frequency as well as values.
Right.
Yeah.
And just really, we have to really change how we're looking at these problem people, because it's not being addressed, and it is really hurting all of our businesses. And in some case, I mean, Sportsman Warehouse, they're one of the, for the first quarter of this, since September, my understanding is they're like number one in the nation for theft. So you can't have that. You know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
How are we ever going to keep businesses open in our communities when they're being crushed by the theft?
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hey folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, the concept of what you were saying that Casey had brought over from the Valley kind of seems logical. It's kind of cool. What magnitude are you talking about? Is there going to be enough beds to really make a dent if there is an actual repercussion of somebody shoplifting repeatedly and stealing repeatedly?
Right. So, you know, we're going to start off sort of like Shasta Small and see how it goes, basically committing to each city would get a bed and then the sheriff's office would have a couple. And really you are looking at, you know, one or two people in your community who you know are the constant problem. But it does have a ripple effect because right now thieves know they're not going to go to jail. They literally are getting a cite from the officer. And this changes that because now they understand, if I get arrested, I could be the guy they're going to take to the jail and have sit there for 6 months. So it's sort of the idea that at some point jail has to be an option again, such that it becomes
a deterrent.
You know, yep, that's right. And that's what we've lost. And that's, I think, one of the most damaging parts of COVID is it's really affected how we're able to curb people's behavior.
Is this COVID related or was this something that was in play prior to?
So obviously with the petty thieves, this was always a problem. But I will say this, pre-COVID, if you committed a theft and you were put on misdemeanor probation and then you violated again, you would get a jail sentence. And that was sort of how we were, you know, so sadly there were those people that got away with it for a little bit. But once they were on probation, the judges would say, nope, you violated the terms that I gave you. You're going to now sit at the jail. That's what we lost with COVID because they had to reduce the population so significantly to make sure everybody was being safe. So we really did lose too many beds such that we couldn't really, you know, handle this population anymore.
Is there any indication that that's going to be relaxed? I know California seems to be on the low end of reported cases, et cetera, with the virus, and yet we're the most aggressive about government mandates and things of that nature. Are they talking about loosening that up in association with the reduced numbers so that there's some relief in the county jails throughout the state?
Well, it's like the same way the court has gone, where we sort of reopen, but then we have some really bad days of numbers, and then we close back up. So the jail for a while started to reopen somewhat, and, you know, sort of be open for business. We're booking people again, and then they kind of stepped back a little bit. So I'm hoping, you know, I think everybody's just fearful of going into the winter months and flu season, but I'm hoping we're going to see a change here in the new year.
Yeah, but the flu is different. I mean, a humble crud. Fine.
Right. No, yeah, no, that's... no. Absolutely. No, I agree. It's completely different.
You'd have three people in there, and two of them would have uniforms on. Oh,
I meant regards to the restrictions.
Oh, okay. Fine.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I asked you last year or not, ham or turkey?
Oh, my gosh, turkey.
Okay, good.
And tons of cranberry sauce. How about you, Brian? Ham or turkey?
Turkey, absolutely. No question about it. Not even a discussion. And mushrooms in the dressing also.
Well, I would like that, but there are some in my family who would not.
So see,
I get ruled on that one. I'm out on that one. How about you?
Oh, absolutely. I get a chance to make it. It's mine. Absolutely. More mushrooms, the better. Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you on the backside. Thanks, Maggie.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. See everybody tomorrow.